Paul, I'm very excited to welcome Jason Michelli to join us. He's a United Methodist pastor and a popular blogger. He's from the D.C. area, and his new book is not what you'd expect. We were talking about this in the break. If it had just been a book about a pastor who got cancer and fell back on faith, right, I would have said, well, there's a million books like that.
Right.
And if it was a comedian who got cancer and fell back on humor, well, there's a million books like that.
Also, you'd be like, who's the comic? Yeah, I wasn't a fan. Let's not have him on.
Well, you know, I'm always happy anytime there's anything dealing with spirituality and humor,
right,
because I talk about it a lot. I'm actually, tonight I'm at the Museum of the Moving Image doing a Q&A with Reza Aslan.
Oh, wow.
His new series Believer premieres on CBS this week, and it's about him as a Muslim traveling around the world and interacting with different kinds of religions and seeing how different people worship. So we always like to do religious-themed stories if they're cool and not, you know, fundamentalist hater bots. But Jason Michelli's story really, really caught us by surprise because it's so rare you find a book about humor from the ecclesiastical point of view, and even more rare that it's about cancer. But I'll tell you something. There's never been a pastor or a priest who's published a book with a title like Cancer is Funny, Keeping Faith in Stage Serious Chemo, published by Fortress Press. What a pleasure to welcome Pastor Jason Michelli to SiriusXM Insight. Welcome, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Hearing that you have Joan Osborne and Mel Brooks on your show, it makes me feel like a loser, but I'll do the best I can.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Hey, they didn't have cancer. Come on, you had cancer, man.
Yeah, we kind of hope it'll make you feel like you're mingling with some of the greats. and again, they're lucky to be on a show with you because your book is so inspirational. I didn't know when it first came across my desk, oh, is this going to be one of those really sappy, feel-good cancer stories that treats faith like a cartoon and it's just full of platitudes? I mean, you really go there, sir. This is not just a book about being funny in the face of cancer. This is a book about keeping a sense of humor in the face of having to question everything you've ever believed about your own faith, because what kind of a God, ...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like staring your mortality in the face to let pretense fall away. And I think when pretense falls away, you know, humor and earthy language come out. At least they do for me, or anyone else who's kind of authentically human, I think.
Well, how did you first find out, Pastor, that you had this tumor in your body? What was the process that led for you from you leading your regular life to then undergoing chemotherapy?
Yeah, well, call me Jason.
Sure. Thank you.
So about a little over 2 years ago, I had about 3 months of just really intense abdominal pain that would come and go. And I kind of chalked it up to, you know, stress from church people, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go in and out of doctors, not finding anything. And then eventually I went to a GI doctor and that led to a CAT scan. And I was told that I'd hear something, you know, in 5 to 7 business days. And instead that night I was getting a phone call that begins with, you know, I hope you're sitting down. And then, so what I found out was that the pain was caused by my intense kind of telescoping in on itself. And that was most likely caused by a tumor. So I had surgery the next morning. I woke up from surgery to my wife telling me, you know, they hadn't biopsied it yet, but it was likely one of 5 rare cancers. And then in the coming days, I found out I had something called mantle cell lymphoma, which normally affects only men in their late 70s.
And you were 37, so, right?
Yeah, it's just incredibly rare.
You were always ahead of yourself.
I like to think I'm unique in all things. I was in cancer too. So that started a year of really intense chemo that I just came out of a year ago, and I still do. I do a day of chemo a month. I was just there this morning, actually. I was at the infusion center where a chaplain brought around ashes and told me that, you know, to dust I will return.
But you skipped over something that was I read that it was not even classified as stage 4. It
correct.
Stage serious.
I've never heard the term before, Jason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's because, you know, everybody knows from cancer movies, like, that's what you're supposed to ask, right? What stage is it? And so I asked my doctor, and he, you know, explained to me that mantle cell normally manifests itself only after it's been aggressive throughout your body. So there's really no way of knowing when it started or how serious it is. It's just always somewhere between stage 4 and stage 5. And so he deflected my question by calling it stage serious. That became just how I thought of it and still do.
What's really interesting about the book is that you point out that don't confuse having a sense of humor with happiness. And in fact, it's the absence of happiness that makes the presence of laughter all the more necessary.
Yeah, I think, I mean, as a pastor, I bury people all the time. And so I was already aware of how quickly, you know, you can go from bone-racking grief to laughter at the most absurd thing that pops up. And that's how I found, you know, my own grief dealing with my cancer to be true, that, you know, it's as you're made more vulnerable, I think one of the things that falls away is whether or not it's appropriate to laugh at this. And kind of the macro theme I take in the book is, you know, how everyone assumes that suffering leads you to God or enlightenment or some kind of vantage
point. Oh, not Catholics, not Catholics. Oh, no. We don't fetishize suffering ever.
So everyone kind of assumes that suffering, you know, leads, you know, to some sort of wisdom or spiritual development.
Or grace.
Yeah, but for me, or grace. But if who God is most fundamentally is joy, then it makes sense to me that the experience of suffering doesn't leave you grief-stricken. Eventually, it has to give way to joy and laughter.
That's what I love about the book, because I think to some degree, if you're a believer, you've got to choose what God you believe in. Do you believe that God is love? Do you believe that joy is a natural state for us, and that love and fellowship and appreciation of life and gratitude are the way it's supposed to be? Or do you believe in the angry alcoholic step God who wants us all to be miserable for the sins we were born with in the womb? And, you know, are we to beat our breasts and atone all the time for the sins we committed when we were five? You see clearly have chosen the God of love and of joy and fellowship. And I think that is a design for living for anyone who's going through a life-threatening illness and wants to fall back on faith.
Yeah, it's funny. In my Ash Wednesday sermon for tonight, I titled it "God Doesn't Give a Damn," and
I say that every day.
And I really do believe that. For me, you know, God isn't a name; it's the answer we give to the question, "Why is there something instead of nothing?"
But you had to be questioning your faith, obviously.
Yeah,
and that's what's fascinating.
Yeah,
and because
exactly.
I know this is cliche, but it's like, well, if there's a God, why is he doing this to me? I'm a good guy.
Exactly.
I've been treating people well. I'm serving God. Is there a God? So how do you rehabilitate yourself from that point of view?
I mean, for me, you know, what I write about in the book is that, you know, once you're thrust into this community called cancer, the question you find yourself asking isn't, you know, why me, God? It's why them? You know, that all of a sudden you're thrown into the scrum of all of these people who are suffering, you know, and children too. And so it's just like, why? So it's not just, you know, why me? It's why is this the best possible world that you can create, God? That's the question that I wrestled with. And I don't think there's any satisfying answer to it other than, you know, what, you know, we would call church, that, you know, we have a community of care, that's what God gives us, not explanations.
But that's what I think I appreciate the most about your book, Jason, beyond the talk about cancer and grace and strength and the coping mechanism of humor. You know, the opposite of faith isn't doubt. The opposite of faith is certainty. And to me, doubt has always been an integral part of faith. I mean, if you never experience doubt, then right. You can't call it faith. You call it rock solid knowledge. And so I think that in many ways, I think a lot of folks who haven't experienced cancer or disease or even care about the humor element can really draw a lot from how you, with tremendous grace and an obvious gift for language, struggle with the very why me question that you don't think you have a right to struggle with. It's a very human book, and the fact that you managed to make it funny kind of makes me resent you, in a way, as a comedian. I mean, how can chemotherapy be funny, Pastor? How did you decide to make chemo funny?
Can I just say, John told me off air, I'm thinking of getting cancer so I could be funnier.
That's true.
Yeah,
just for the material.
It's the perfect trump card in any conversation. But,
oh, yeah? I have cancer. Beat that.
It does lend itself to just absurd gallows humor. I mean, from your nurse handing you the bag, you know, with your meds on it, and you have to verify your name and your birth date and social security number on it, and you notice the warning on the bag says, you know, this chemotherapy may cause cancer. Like that's just absurd.
Does it really?
It says writes out one of the warning labels on a chemo drug said may cause leukemia.
Yeah, like
pick your poison.
I mean, it makes you lose your pubic hair, for which the cancer industry provides you pubic hair wigs.
All right, now this is a real thing. So this is
a real thing.
I read about this in the book.
There's four of them, and I don't have cancer. I have four.
You
different,
just have in case
four
you,
pubic
I
hair wigs.
I wear them on my head.
Blonde. I have a red one. I like to be
depending
spicy.
On what that weekend's date likes.
Yeah,
of course.
Exactly.
I have to confess, I never knew there was prosthetic pubic hair for cancer survivors.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm like, well, how could it not be a comedy book once you see those?
I mean, there's just things like, I mean, yeah, it's just an absurd. I took my wife and my kids to a concert, and I was confused as a woman, just because of my weight loss and hair loss and. My svelte little purse that I was carrying for my wife.
But how do people deal with your humor, right? Because people then sort of are on pins and needles, sort of, do I laugh at that? You're taking them to a place that they've never been taken to. How was the reaction, and how did you help them deal with it, your humor?
Especially because you're a public figure. You have a congregation. So I understand the need to be strong, not just for yourself and for your partner and your family, but for all of your congregants.
It was a tricky wicket at first. I have a large permanent record in the bishop's office filled with complaints about me. So.
Oh, really? What were they complaining about?
Language, that kind of thing. Appropriate story.
You dropped the F-bomb?
This guy's my kind of
clergy.
I have been known
to drop the F-bomb.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
That's why you got cancer, by the way.
No, he didn't do it in Aramaic, so Christ wouldn't be offended.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So initially people were, some people were unnerved by the frankness of my language talking about my experience, but I thought it was appropriate. I thought it was needful to narrate my experience as honestly as possible for the people in my pews. But even now, the reaction to the book is, it definitely gets people's attention. I have a friend who is a teacher, and she and the other teachers have a bulletin board in the hallway where it says what they're reading. And so she wrote, on the bulletin board on this little piece of paper, I'm reading Cancer is Funny. And people would tear it down or scratch through it. And she would put it back up and someone else would do it again. And so there's this, and that's important, because I'm not saying in the book that everyone's cancer is funny. I'm saying that, my cancer was funny.
If you're just tuning in, our guest is Pastor Jason Michelli. His excellent new book is called Cancer is Funny, Keeping Faith in Stage Serious Chemo. And your comment about the folks tearing down the sign with the name of your book made me think about a quote from the book, because it really is about fear. And you write, other Christians treat fear like it's more cancerous than cancer. I was afraid because I loved. I feared what cancer would do to my sons, to their happiness and joy and innocence and faith. What did your bout with cancer do for your own fear?
It made me accustomed to it. That, just today, my doctor wanted to, he drew the standard deviation 4 years until relapse on the back of a box of latex gloves. And so, it's...
Did he put one over his head like Howie Mandel?
So it's the uncertainty with which I live now is just, it's just like a shadow that follows me everywhere. And so it hasn't calmed my fears at all. It's just, it's almost like a wound that you get used to feeling there.
Do you get any inspiration from Norman Cousins? Because this is sort of the direct lineage of that idea of what, he wrote about.
I don't know who Norman Cousins is, but that sounds very insightful.
He had cancer and battled it with a positive less probably faith-based because he was the layperson, but humor and positivity.
The laugh yourself well.
Yeah, I would pick up the book. Mm. It was a very, very big... influential book in its day, and you're swimming in the same waters. with yours.
So you're using my book to promote another book.
Well, you know, I think that his cancer was more significant than yours, and I think yours is lightweight cancer, like AAA. No. I'm sorry. I'm just for you to read. You know, this guy is funny.
Yeah.
No, I'm feeling threatened all the time. But you know,
I think other people are able to be funny about their cancer just because there's something about Christianity, I think, and religion that people think certain expressions and feelings and language is out of bounds. Really what I wanted to do was say, like, no, every human feeling is a genuine human feeling.
Yeah, this human, piety, this pilgrim piety that we think that Jesus never laughed because there's never been a movie showing Jesus laughing. I mean, if you read the Bible, Christ was the leading cause of alcohol at parties. I think he appreciated having a good time.
And we say that Jesus was fully human, right? So, I mean, he stank, he got boners, you know, he probably lost his temper.
Yeah.
I mean, we know he lost his temper. So, like,
yeah, he sure in the temple.
A woman of very derogatory words at one time. So it's, but yeah, there's just something about our churchiness that rules some feelings out of bounds. And I think that can do profound theological and emotional damage.
Reducing these figures to marble statues really makes them useless in terms of coping with what life throws at you. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of people find religion obsolete. And, you know, you talk about one of the most powerful quotes in your book: only now that I was suffering more than I ever had in my life, did I learn how Christians do not have an answer for suffering or evil. There are those who might interpret that as being kind of defeatist or nihilistic. I actually think it's a rather just simple strength and truth.
Yeah. I think it's Christians forget that, you know, the only answer we have to the crosses of the world is resurrection. You know, that the resurrection doesn't validate or explain away the mystery of suffering. It's just that, you know, we believe we have a story that shows God will in some way ultimately vindicate us.
Did you ever feel like cheating with other religions? I mean, the Buddhists do go quite heavily into suffering.
Well, it's funny, after a recent national event that I won't name, I lamented to my mother that, you know, forget Canada. If I just had a Jew in my family tree, I'd move to Israel. and my mom was like, my grandparents were both Jewish. And I was like, no wonder I'm funny.
Have you retooled what you say to people who are in your congregation and in the position you're in, facing a life-threatening disease, in terms of, did you start to say those things to yourself and go, man, this is kind of, that kind of line I've been saying to people is kind of bullshit. It doesn't work. And have you retooled your message to your people in your position?
I've always been a big believer in, you know, the best thing to say is not say anything at all and let them know that you're there. But I mean, just today after I got chemo, I went to the hospital to see a guy who's about my age and has cancer, and his doesn't look like it's going to end well. And I was more willing to go there emotionally with him than I was in the past, I think. Because I'm not afraid, and I think I can empathize better than I did before.
Well, it sounds like this made you not just a stronger man, but a better pastor and a better leader of your parishioners.
I mean,
one would hope with all those things in the file on you, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely at the place where they know everything about me, and I know a lot of stuff about. So there's it's trust, which is the same word as faith. So,
I'm curious about how you, I guess, deployed the humor, because I read that you actually named one of your tumors Larry, and
Larry the Invaginator was the full name.
Now there must have been some people either in your flock or in your family who were a bit put off by it. I mean, we're used to treating cancer with such reverence. Don't get me wrong, I admire how you did it, but tell us a bit about Larry the tumor.
So Larry was the 11 by 11 inch tumor in my intestine, and when the doctor had told me, like my intestine is telescoping in on itself, the actual medical term is invaginate. And my preteen son was sitting next to me, and he heard that word on the phone, and he was like, "Invaginates? We learned about that in family life." and so that just
he's not as funny as his father, but I appreciate the the blasphemy.
So that just kind of became, you know, so Larry for me is, you know, I tried to use that as like, I now understand what women go through in childbirth. I carried something else around with me. But yeah, it's not everyone was comfortable with my use of humor talking about a serious, you know, form of suffering. But, you know, my response to them is, well, you're not the one with cancer, so be quiet.
Well, I tell us about how your flock have responded both during your illness and since your recovery and since you're publishing this book with a rather edgy title.
I mentioned it in the book. I mean, I dedicate the book to them too. And you know, I'm proud that they never gave me any trite cliches, or felt the need to fix me, when I was going through the worst of it.
What does that mean? How did that manifest itself? In other words, they just slapped me on the back, and I'm not trying to be funny, go, you know what, you're going to get through this and move on and not make a big deal about it, or?
Oh, no, I mean, so, like, some of my favorite cards from church people were just blank cards that said shit on the top of them. You know? Like, nobody sent me Hallmark cards that said, you know, all things happen for a reason, or, you know, right. You know, like, you know, you can pray your way. No one sent me any of that sentimental, cliché Christian speak. But instead, you know, they took my kids to the pool when I wasn't able to take them. They drove me to chemo. They caught me when I passed out. They wiped vomit off my mouth. They were there for us in really just concrete, loving ways. And when I was at a real low point, you know, I didn't lose my faith, but I definitely was so exhausted emotionally and physically that I just couldn't feel my faith anymore. And it occurred to me that, you know, if faith means trust, then sometimes what it means is trusting other people who tell you that God is with you.
Did you ever consider suicide?
No. I considered that it was a luxury that other people often have available to them.
I understand that. I mean, with your kids especially. But you did wrestle with the notion that perhaps this God that you're continuing your devotion to is the same God who gave you the affliction.
Yeah, I mean, that's I complain about that in the book. It's just, you know, when people talk about, like, yeah, you need to fight it, you can beat it, Jason, all of that. And, you know, what that doesn't take into account is that, you know, this cancer is who I am on a chromosomal level, that there's nothing I did to cause it. There's nothing, you know, I can stop drinking or eating or any of that. This is just, like, who I am. It's who God has made me to be. And that's a mystery that, if, you know, I could answer it, God wouldn't be God.
Is this confirmed that, you know, some people feel God just made it all, made us, put us here, and just it's a crapshoot and doesn't really have any say in our life going forward?
Or would the life have any meaning without random suffering?
Right.
I mean, I think my faith compels me to say that, you know, this is the best possible world, because God is good and loving. And so whatever gift of a world that God gives is the best one. And, I mean, the only real explanation I have for it, or way of thinking through it, is that, you know, for us to return God's love with love of our own, there has to be freedom. And, you know, that's not just freedom to choose God. That's a freedom that's, you know, woven into the very fabric.
But how can this same God be positive and negative in our lives? And why?
No, we're getting deep now.
So say that again?
Well, he's only given you the top theological question of the millennium, but go ahead.
And if you don't get this right, we're taking all your meds away.
Playing for the steak knife set. Here's the question.
How can that God, who you believe in and still believe in, be the entity that gives us good and evil, bad, negativity, hurt, pain, in the same entity, and how do you square that?
All right, so we're going there. So to get
I don't want to be a pain in the ass.
No, I get off on this stuff. You're fine.
Me too. This is all I think about.
It's gonna be more like Howard Stern than you're comfortable with, probably.
No, it's like Howard Stern on Ash Wednesday. Let's go there.
That's a good point though, right? I mean, it's Ash Wednesday, and so, you know, for Christians, we're entering a season where we remember that evil isn't something that derives from God, that it's in some way a privation or an absence within the creation that God has made. And so, like, I think Lent is a season, especially when we remember that the world as it is right now isn't the world that God intends. And that, like, what we believe about the Jesus story, among other things, is that, you know, God, through Jesus, is contending with sin and death and evil and suffering. And so I think, I mean, that's a real abstract philosophical kind of, like, way to go. But, like, what that means for people, like, in my situation is, like, Christians especially and Jews are the people who are supposed to insist that, you know, this suffering in the world does not reflect the will of God.
So,
but it exists.
Yeah, does that opens up? Now we're going really into philosophy.
I mean,
you can't really have it both ways.
Would
that then mean that God is not all powerful if He has no ability to stop suffering?
It means that how we define God's power isn't limited to just will alone.
So, what is behind God's motivation that we have evil and suffering? There must be some reason that He wants us to go through that.
See, I would say no. That evil is an absence, or evil is a manifestation of, I mean, I think that's why there's this third character in Scripture that we call the devil. You know, and it's not like there's a guy with, you know, horns and a pitchfork, but I think that is the language the Bible uses to be able to say this isn't of or from God.
It's selfishness.
In some way, God is contending against it.
I mean, my theory has always been, if there is a heaven, it's packed full of souls saying, send me down to live in creation for a while. I don't believe that if there is a heaven, there can't be time there. Time is a thing we made up. So, you know, God says, all right, you want to go live on Earth? You want to be a 9-year-old Hindu boy with polio? Sure, I'm going to come right back here. I send you down there, you're going to live a nice long life and then die horribly at age 80. Okay, send me down. I'm going to send you down there, you're going to be poor and have 19 kids. In the DR, okay, Lord, whatever, I'm coming back. You know, I mean, if you want to adopt the, not to get too much into conversations with God territory, but the image that God has to experience His creation through us, then everything that can happen does and should happen, from the greatest tragedies and vilest hatreds to the most extraordinary acts of kindness and grace. So I kind of feel like, you know, the worst thing that God could do is make a boring world to live in.
Yeah.
I do, yeah, I would agree that, you know, God doesn't want a boring world. But I do think, you know, it's important for Christians to remember that, you know, suffering isn't something that God sends. It's something that God takes on Himself in Christ.
Well, so you certainly demonstrated ably in the book, and I want to come to one of your sermons, actually, because you're my kind of blasphemer, Pastor.
Yeah.
I got to tell you,
if we come, can you drop the F-bomb a few times?
I will do it just for you. Yeah.
How do you feel now, Jason? Before we wrap, how are you feeling? You're obviously still going in for treatment. What is your current prognosis?
I mean, I feel normal. I feel strong. I feel, you know, like I did before. But, you know, my prognosis is wait and see. I'll never be in remission. And the odds are this will come back again. The median number is 7 years. So, you know, my goal is to get my kids through high school.
Will you be writing more books?
I'm working on a relationship one right now, actually.
Dynamite. Will you please come see us again? I really love your take on faith and theology. Obviously, to say nothing of your take on handling cancer, I think you're a very important voice for the national debate on what Christianity was, is, could be, and should be. And I want to recommend your book again very, very highly. And congratulations on getting such great theologians like Diana Butler Bass for book jacket quotes. The book, of course, is Cancer Is Funny. Keeping Faith in Stage Serious Chemo, written by Jason Michelli. Thank you so much for joining us. It's really a pleasure to meet you, and thanks for going so deep with us.
Yeah, no, and if you ever need a funnier sidekick than that guy.
I need a funnier psychic than the regular psychic I have. No, really, we'd love
Did
to have you
back. Did I just get heckled
by a Methodist pastor?
Pastor?
Yeah. Voice of God, right?
All right. You know what? I hope you get cancer. Oh, wait a minute. Good luck.
Jason,
hope
thank you.
Hope you live a long life.
Please,
seriously.
Please join us again. I'd love to have you on for more political matters sometime. Really a pleasure.
Anytime.
Thank you so much.